serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode devoted to the liberation of Nazi concentration camps 75 years ago. The first camp to be liberated was Ohrdruf on the 4th of April, 1945. You can tap into our most recent episode for what the first Americans through the gates there experienced. On April 12th, three preeminent American generals visited that camp, making sure the gruesome reality of the atrocities committed there would be documented for history and witnessed by civilians from the neighboring towns. That was also the day that a young ambulance driver from California named Jim Sanders arrived at Ohrdruf. The 20-year-old had seen some pretty horrible things in helping wounded Americans and even some wounded enemy soldiers throughout the war, but what he was about to witness would shock his system.
Someone ordered us to go down to this camp, one of the sub-camps of Buchenwald, called Ohrdruf. Well, no one had told us about the concentration camp. We had no idea. So we drove down about 30 miles to this little town of Ohrdruf, to find out, and they sort of, everybody knew where the camp was by then. And so we went up the hill through the gate with the big deal over the gate. We pulled in, and all we saw were dead people. I mean, we'd seen dead and dying people, but these people, they were trying to get rid of. They were trying to burn the evidence, and they couldn't get it done. The ones that could still walk, they'd started to move them back to Buchenwald, walking. That day, that particular day, I don't know why, but we were there when Patton, Eisenhower, and Bradley drove, and Walton Walker, who was the 20th Corps commander, drove in their jeeps to see the place. And that was the day that Patton had the mayor and the people in town come up to see this place. And, of course, they all knew it, but there wasn't anything they could do about it. And the mayor and his wife went home that day and committed suicide. And I met the mayor, present mayor, and his wife of Ohrdruf when we were back there. They're still trying to outlive that stigma of having the camp up on their hill of the town. And I don't know until all of us are gone, they're not going to get away from it. It was just too much. Our vocabulary wouldn't cover it. It was too much. And our only involvement in this, the whole thing from Buchenwald and Ohrdruf, was that we were with the ambulance and someone, we don't remember who, ordered us to pick up people that were lying in the fields. They couldn't, we assume, and we talked about it, we think they were the people that were moving from Ohrdruf back to the camp. Now, Ohrdruf was only one of the subcamps. There were about 80 subcamps around Buchenwald where they went to work. Now, Buchenwald itself was not a killing camp per se. It was not a gas camp. Thousands died, but they, malnutrition, beatings, whatever. But they were asked us to pick up people that were lying in the fields. And we didn't know what they were. They were little striped pajamas with little patches, and we could put two on a litter. Can you imagine that? One's head up here, one's head down there. Those Germans are still trying to live down this thing of the Holocaust. They're still trying to live it down all these years later, and the only time they'll be able to get rid of it is when we're all gone. And part of the reason I wrote the book was because of the Holocaust deniers, too. As long as I'm alive, these eyes still remember it. It's still up here in the computer, this brain called a computer. It's still there. I can still see it today.
The memories of Jim Sanders, who passed away in 2018 at the age of 93, he chronicled his experiences at Ohrdruf and through the rest of the war in the book Saving Lives, Saving Memories, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. The day Jim was at Ohrdruf, the larger camp at Buchenwald had been liberated for less than 24 hours. Leela Morrison, a young nurse from Georgia, was eventually sent there to care for some of the survivors.
That was terrible. That was bad. I still have a hard time believing it, and I saw it with my own eyes.
Did they prepare you for that? Did you have any idea what you were walking into there?
Not really. We didn't have time for that. I'd heard about them, of course, before I ever left the States, but there's a lot of difference in hearing about it and seeing it with your own eyes. That was hard. I still dream about that a little, because that was the largest concentration camp in Germany. And we arrived there, like I told you, that night. They told us, well, you girls have to go down in the morning to help with some of the prisoners. So the next morning we were ready to go, and they came up and said, you girls can't go. You're not going today. Our doctors are already down there, and conditions are so deplorable. We can't let you go down. So we didn't go that first day, but we did the next day. And they had it cleaned up pretty good from what it was. That was where they pyramided the bodies, and they had trenches dug, and they just push the bodies over into the trench. This is where they experimented with many of the prisoners. You know, you've read about the doctors.
My grandfather was doctored through the gates at 3:15 p.m. That's why the clock on the gate still says 3:15. Yeah. And the German doctor bragged to him about what they had done. And you've seen and read and the human lampshades and all the horrendous things. But what did you see when you got there that jarred your senses and your understanding?
Well, in the first place, the prisoners looked like they were worse than skin and bones. You wondered how they could even walk. And they all had the striped uniform on, you know. A lot of them had left, and the only means they had was walking. And we called them DPs. They were displaced persons.
Right.
But people from Czechoslovakia or wherever, they were walking home. And it was hundreds of miles. I don't know how they ate. Some of them even had babies. You wondered how in the world they could have kept them alive. But this man that took us through had been a prisoner there for quite a while. He had a jewelry store in Prague.
Mm.
And the Germans came in there one day and said, you know, come on, you're our prisoner. And so they brought him up to the camp. And he was married and had two children and owned a jewelry store. But he didn't know where his wife was or where his children were. He didn't know. But he took us all through the camp, took us up to the crematory, was kind of on a little hill, took us all through there and told us what happened to the prisoners. They had to slide down into the basement and take all their clothes off because they told them they were going to take a shower. So then they'd hit them on the head with, it looked like it's a big stick, and it looked like a pine knot. As they slid down, he told us they hit them in the back of the head, and they were knocked out, thankfully. Then we went upstairs to where the crematory was, and it was like a two-story thing, brick, and you stepped down into it, and they had eight ovens there, eight here. They had a wall there, big, long wall, and it had bottles with ashes. Now, I don't know why they saved those, but that's what they told us were there. That was a tough one. I still think of that and dream of it. Yeah, that was the worst. You couldn't understand how in the world you could treat another person that way. But we had one real good thing. It had a big iron gate and barbed wire really twisted around. It had a sign in English across, and it said 6.5 million Jews and political prisoners have been annihilated. And this man had apparently been a prisoner there for quite a while. And he ran up to us and he said, oh, you're Americans? And we said, yes. And he said, oh, I've been here. But when the Americans came, they had those big tanks. Oh, he was smiling. He was so happy. And I'd just never forgotten him. How wonderful he was there when he was free. And oh, they loved America. All of us, no matter who we were heroes to them.
And I imagine as tough as all of that was to see, that probably was as powerful an indication as any of how important the work you'd been doing was.
Oh, it was. Just made your heart want to pop. You were so happy to see at least one man. But you couldn't help but think about those 6.5 million, too.
Absolutely.
For no reason. The only reason was because they were Jewish.
That was Nurse Leela Morrison, an amazing lady. You can link to her complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And we finish today with one more veteran whose experience at Buchenwald and later encounters with those who questioned it have led to decades of speeches and dramatic presentations that are ongoing, even at age 96 and even during the coronavirus pandemic. Jimmy Weldon served overseas with the 1270th Engineer Combat Battalion.
Mainly our stuff was still building the pontoon bridges and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll never forget when we went through Buchenwald concentration camp and we saw these people laying on these wooden slabs, reaching out under there trying to say, thank you for helping us. We thought, I can't believe this. It's not possible. We walk on through the barracks and we go out in the back and there are cubicles back there in the back. Hundreds of bodies nude laying in these cubicles just like they've been thrown out like you would with cattle or something waiting to be cremated. We thought, this is not possible. That will I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
But
had you ever, before you got there to Buchenwald, had you ever heard of this idea of a concentration camp? Did you know that the Jews were being exterminated and tortured and treated the way they were?
Well, we heard it, but it didn't register because it's like a lot of people didn't even know this when they lived very close to it because they kept it away from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You just young. See, again, we're young kids, and we're in the army. We're going.
What was the biggest impact of that experience on you, of what you saw, what you heard, what you witnessed there?
Well, the engraved in my mind is our going through the barracks, just really to see these people, to think, I can't believe here. They're just there laying on those wooden slabs, just enough room to slide in and out. And then I remember seeing one man when we went in the back in one place, he was just sitting there, the little face looking like, I don't know what's happening. He was just alone sitting there, and I thought, golly, I couldn't talk to him or anything. There's no way. But those are the things that are in my mind
mm-hmm.
that I can't, wouldn't want to forget either. But
sounds like it was appalling to you, but also just shocking to know that people could be treated that way?
That's right. That's it. I'll never forget our platoon sergeant when he stood there and started crying. And I thought, golly, Moses. Powerful guy, but it was through such like I can't. What's happened? Why? What are we seeing? What are we seeing here? We're going through things. We're doing things that are not that's close to this. And I think, well, that was it. We were fortunate in the sense that I missed a lot of that. When we were doing our work, we were kind of by ourselves. But when you see the things like concentration camps, I'm still thinking it's almost a dream.
Jimmy Weldon would meet his wife in England after the war. They both were performers. One of his most memorable roles came as the voice of the cartoon duck Yakky Doodle on the Yogi Bear show. But in recent decades, Jimmy has spent much of his energy trying to educate younger generations about the America he loves and the history he believes they should understand.
My passion today is talking to young people about America. I did a thing that was used on the USS Kennedy in the Persian Gulf during the Iraq War for 4,500 sailors. It's a flag, a tribute to our flag. I want you to imagine that you're looking at a flag standing there, and I'm out in the audience, and I'm going to walk up to the flag and hold it, and I'll even look at the audience until I say the end. And here it is. I am the flag of the United States of America, conceived in the dreams of liberty and the hopes of freedom. I was designed by the hands of Betsy Ross, and her sewing basket was my cradle. Though I was never an orphan, I was adopted by the Continental Congress in 1777 and proclaimed the national emblem of a nation, newly born on this continent, fighting valiantly for survival and destined to bring to all mankind a new concept in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I rode with Ethan Allen, the Green Mountain Boys, at the Battle of Fort Bennington. I was flown above the decks of Old Ironsides and the mass of Yankee Clippers. I blazed the trail with Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett. I led the settlers coming west and crossed Death Valley in a covered wagon. Once I fell to the ground at Custer's last stand at the Little Bighorn. There were no living hands left to pick me up. But I galloped up the slopes of San Juan Hill with Colonel Teddy Roosevelt and his Rough Riders in the United States Cavalry. I was carried through the halls of Montezuma onto the shores of Tripoli by the United States Marine Corps. I stayed with the boys till it was over there. On the battlefields of the Marne, Chateau Thierry, St. Mihiel, and the Argonne Forest, I saw many of the youth and manhood of our nation fall and lie still in death. They'd given their last full measure of blood. The war was over for them forever, but I kept my lonely vigil over their graves and stayed to watch the poppies grow him into crosses row on row in Flanders Field. I was raised by six brave Marines and sailors during the hell of Iwo Jima in the final hours of World War II. Haven't changed much, 239 years. I still have my original 13 stripes, but as each state came in the Union, a new star was proudly added to the constellation of my blue field. Started with 13, now they're 50. I've draped the caskets of our nation's heroes and borne to their last resting place the bodies of presidents, generals, admirals, humble privates, and the unknown soldier. Wherever free men gather, wherever there's justice, equality, faith, hope, charity, truth, and brotherly love, there too am I. When you stand with your hand over your heart and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to me, don't merely mouth the words, but think of what they mean to you and mean what you say. And when you come to the phrase One Nation Under God, remember it matters not what your religious belief. It only matters that you hold your faith dear, that you practice it daily, and that you preserve it forever. History will never write my obituary, for I am the stars and stripes forever. I'm Old Glory. I'm your flag. I am you. I did that for the Burbank Middle School. The little boy in the back of the room said, that never happened when I told him I was with Patton's 3rd Army Combat Engineers that liberated Buchenwald concentration camp. When he said that, I just screamed out, don't say that! I was there! He backed up against the wall. Later, I talked to the largest Lions Club in Long Beach. When I mentioned this, a little man came out of the audience with a yarmulke on the back of his head, and he said, Jimmy, I'm Rabbi Cade. I was at Buchenwald concentration camp. We stood there hugging and crying in the middle of the room. Later, he had a program called Survivors of the Holocaust and had me speak.
And so many have heard Jimmy Weldon speak since then. That experience actually inspired him to create a nonprofit called the Center for Youth Patriotism. He's 96 now. I had the privilege of chatting with him this week. The coronavirus pandemic has put him on lockdown in his Southern California home, so he's had to postpone some of his speaking engagements. But others, he's still keeping up with virtually. A 96-year-old veteran sharing his love for our country on Zoom. Just one more example of the reality that when Nazi concentration camps were liberated 75 years ago, those persecuted prisoners weren't the only ones whose lives were forever changed. Thanks again to Alex Kershaw and the Friends of the National World War II Memorial. Make sure to watch that commemorative video online and join us again next time on Hometown Heroes when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.